Chapter 28. Pat was right. I read all night long. The last time I remember looking at the clock, it was 5:30. Then, although I thought I couldn't sleep at all, I dozed and woke again at 7 o'clock. Pat had gone home by the time I woke up. She left a note on the dining table, telling me coffee and a bowl of oatmeal waited for me. I stumbled to the bathroom and showered. A heavy blue sweatshirt and blue jeans would work for the day before me. I pulled on thick socks and stepped into fleece-lined brown leather boots. No more sitting at home and waiting. My mother was out somewhere, maybe cold, maybe hungry. I would do my best to find her. Even after eating, I felt empty inside. The house was too quiet, too big, and the hurting around my heart would not go away. Granny Grace's journal lay on the floor where I dropped it sometime during the early morning. I picked it up and gently placed it on the counter. Now I understood about Markham Caldwell and why Grace had married him. The journal made clear how he had died and why, but it did not shed any light on the current questions of Eileen or the bushy-haired man or why Stuart Wood had offered us such an inflated price for our land. The phone rang as I was brushing my hair. I ran to pick up the receiver. Caller ID told me that Grant was on the other end of the line. Any word? I sounded breathless to my own ears. Have you found her, Grant? Nothing, Darcy. Sorry. Are you doing all right? My heart plummeted. I'm fine, Grant. Didn't Ben's dog pick up on her scent? He hesitated before answering my question.
Yes. Yes, he did, but he lost it.
Where did he lose it? Tell me, Grant.
Murphy trailed her to the river, then the trail stopped.
The river. My hand felt stiff as I replaced the receiver. Did that mean for some reason Mom had gone to the Ventris River and drowned? Had she heard someone in trouble and tried to help?
I poured another cup of coffee and willed my racing thoughts to slow down. A boat. I needed a boat to explore the river.
But who had one I could borrow?
Immediately, Burke Hopkins came to mind.
Burke fished on the river a lot. He would have a boat.
Burke was the one friend I hadn't been able to reach last night. I looked up his number in the phone book and dialed. The phone rang twice, three times. I waited for 10 rings, then hung up.
Maybe he was outside both times I called.
He had chickens to tend to, dogs to feed. Burke didn't have an answering machine, so the best thing would be to drive out to his house. I knew that he would want to join the hunt for Mom if he were not already a part of that search. Jethro rubbed against my ankles, so I checked his food bowl. Still full, he would be fine while I was away. I pulled a stocking cap over my head and buttoned my coat as I jogged to the escape. The threatened snow had not materialized, but heavy gray clouds looked as if they could open at any moment with snow or sleet. If I remembered correctly, Burke Hopkins lived south of town, so I headed toward Deer Track Hill. The long, windy incline was at least dry this morning. When wet and icy, going down the steepest hill in Ventris County was an adventure, but I would have tried it even if it had been treacherous. Somewhere in Ventris County, a small, gray-haired lady needed to come home. Who had her, and why? The only scenario that made sense to me was that someone had kidnapped her. She would have contacted me if she had been able. I refused to consider other possibilities. She might even now be lying out in this weather unprotected and injured, or worse. At the bottom of Deer Track, I made a right turn and headed up yet another hill. Old String Road branched off to the right. To the left was an unnamed, narrow gravel road which led to Burke's house and to the river beyond. I turned onto it. 20 minutes later, neat white letters on the side of a black mailbox told me I had reached my destination. I turned into the driveway, rounded a curve, and there was Mr. Hopkins' small frame house. His old pickup truck sat at the end of the driveway. I remembered Burke saying he had 2 dogs, but they didn't run to meet me, wagging their tails in welcome or barking a warning. In fact, house and yard had a quiet, deserted look. Everything was eerily still. I opened my car door and slid out. Nothing moved around me except the limbs of a giant cottonwood which stood as a sentinel in the front yard. Something about this was not right. I had a feeling that an unseen someone or something watched me. The hair on the back of my neck rose. I stepped up on the wood floor of the porch and knocked at the door, and knocked again. I gave the doorknob a tentative twist. The door swung open. "Mr. Hopkins," I called. "Are you here? It's Darcy Campbell." The living room was dark. I found the light switch beside the door and flipped it up. Brightness from an overhead fixture flooded the area. It was a neat room. Gray, fabric-covered sofa, burgundy recliner, easy chair, a coffee table, a bookcase in one corner, and in the opposite corner, on a small stand, a television. All in all, Burke's living room looked clean, comfortable, and completely empty of life. A black cast-iron wood burner with stovepipe going through the ceiling stood out from a wall. I went to it and placed my hands on its top. Cold. Opening its metal door, I peered inside. A few coals glowed among the ashes, like red eyes awakened from sleep. I spoke aloud, maybe to break the dead silence, maybe to give myself courage. "Nobody has been here for quite some time, certainly not since yesterday, but Burke's car is here, and where are his dogs?" Perhaps he had heard about my mother and had already gone to search for her. He may have left on foot, or if he heard about her trail ending at the river, he might have taken his boat. I ran into the next room, the kitchen, where clean dishes waited in the drainer. The bathroom was spotless, too. A hand towel was draped, dry and unused, over a glass rod. In the two bedrooms, spreads were unrumpled, closets empty of anything suspicious. The whole house looked as if Burke had stepped outside and forgot to come back in. I could not see one clue, not one thing out of place that would point to a hurried departure. Somewhere, a rooster crowed. Chickens. Could something have happened to Mom's old friend as he was going about his chores outside? I raced out the back door and to the large, fenced-in area where several brown hens and a colorful rooster wandered about, pecking at the ground. Water stood in the cast-iron kettle leaning against a tree, evidently put there for them to drink, but the long metal feed trough was completely bare. The chickens were the only living, breathing things on Burke's farm as far as I could see, and they gave the scene a touch of normalcy. Except why hadn't he fed them yesterday? I went into the small lean-to chicken house in search of grain. Just inside the door stood a barrel with a lid. Lifting the lid, I saw a scoop atop a sack full of corn. I quickly filled the scoop and took it outside. The chickens excitedly clucked, flapping their wings, and came running as I poured the corn into the trough. They didn't lift their heads as their bills beat a rapid tattoo on the metal. Now what? If Burke Hopkins had joined the search, wouldn't he have locked his doors or fed his chickens before he left? Judging from the lack of a fire in the stove and the hunger of the chickens, he had not been home since yesterday. If I could find where he kept his boat and somehow maneuver it to the river, I would be able to check out coves and shorelines that searchers on land might miss. Latching the chicken yard gate behind me, I looked over Burke's acreage, wondering where would he keep his boat. Several yards behind the house was a carport with attached shed. Perhaps his boat was there. I hurried over to get a closer look. The door to the shed did not budge when I pulled on it. The hinges wore a coat of rust, and dead grass grew in clumps in front of the door. I tugged and yanked until finally the door creaked open. The only thing inside were some empty baskets, probably not used until springtime when garden produce was ready to be harvested. Hurrying back to the carport, I noticed that a large area of the dirt floor looked darker than the ground around it. It was dry, not damp from the snow or sleet. Burke's boat must have rested there until recently. A logical explanation was that he had heard about my mother and taken his boat to do a water search. Wind whipped around the corner of the shed as I stepped out of its shelter. Pellets of sleet stung my face. Sticking my cold hands in my pockets, I found my leather gloves. I pulled them on and meandered back toward the escape. What should I do now? My mother had disappeared on Granny Grace's land while inspecting our new house. Had I missed a clue there? Returning to our empty farmhouse and waiting was not an option. I had no idea of any new place to search. My only thought was to retrace my steps. Maybe if I went back to our new house, I could uncover some tiny clue that Grant and Jim and I had missed yesterday. Chances of that happening were slim, but I didn't know what else to do. A small movement caught my attention where the yard met the woods. The wind ruffled a dark shape lying on the ground. Dread clamped like a hand around my middle as I walked closer. A dog lay on its side on the ground, the brisk wind stirring his fur. This must be one of Burke's dogs, and explained why I wasn't met with barking. The dog's beautiful head bore a bullet hole. My throat constricted, and I swallowed hard, fighting the urge to throw up. Who shot this animal? Why? Burke's absence had been alarming, but now it became chilling. Somebody, some heartless, unknown person had intruded here and murdered a man's pet. But what had happened to Burke? Surely his disappearance was associated with Mom's. As an old friend once told me, it was too much of a coincidence to be coincidental. I squatted beside the dog and ran my hand across his brown and black coat. Who was this, wolf or ranger? Had he threatened the intruder? Did the killer of the dog shoot Burke, too? Was the old man, even now, lying dead in the woods or been kidnapped? The death of the dog lent a chilling aspect to the disappearances of these two, my mother and her friend. I bowed my head and tried to pray, but fear and desperation paralyzed my thoughts. God is in charge, I told myself. He knows where Mom is, even if I don't. That was the bit of comfort I held on to.